It's all about performance. Consistent. Reliable. Delivering results. With a focus on well-being. To keep you ahead and on top of your game. And at the heart of it all, there has to be trust. Performance. Well-being. Trust. The values key to the success of Hoover, principal club sponsor of Warrington Wolves. Values also embraced by The Wire, which is why, together, we make the perfect team. Hoover and Warrington Wolves. Packs more performance. Discover more at hoover.co.uk.
So welcome to episode 3 of the Through the Wire podcast, and we've got a great one for you today. My guest is Joe Philbin. He's a young man that's really got his head screwed on. He's recently become a father and he's started a clothing brand. And above all, he's a fantastic leader in the Warrington Wolves dressing room. Here's my interview with Joe Philbin. So Joe, welcome to the podcast. You signed your new contract this year, which should take you up to your testimonial year. How crazy is that?
Yeah, pretty crazy. Obviously, I remember kind of being younger at the club, and when we used to train, I remember I was used to train in Padgate Gym, and like I'd be running on this treadmill with this gas mask on, and I used to just think, you're doing this because you want to play a first team game for Warrington, and like that was in the thought in my mind. And now I've played obviously 6-7 seasons at the club, and yeah, I'm going to get my testimonial. It's going to be like a dream come true, really. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, I had aspirations to go and play out in Australia. That was always something that I wanted to do, and I feel like the time would have been even now, this contract or never, for me to do it. And after speaking with my missus and my partner,
we'll cut that bit out, just in case, don't want to cause trouble. And we've
keeping in good content. After speaking with missus, and obviously I've just had a young lad, little Bobby, so we decided to stay in Warrington, and Warrington put a great 4-year deal to me, and you know, my hometown club. I just couldn't turn it down, and I'm so excited for the next few years.
He's such a young lad to have sort of be looking at 10 years service as well. A rumour I heard about you, which when I heard it, I assumed it's utter rubbish, but I'm going to ask you about it anyway, is that you only started playing when you were 15. That can't be true, can it?
Yeah. First really touched a rugby ball when I was 15, yeah. I mean, I'm the son of a pretty overprotective mother. My mum's very, very overprotective of me, and I always played football as a kid since I was four. Just loved football, and then started to gain a little bit of weight when I was 12, 13, and from there I got dropped from. I was in Culture Pay team, and they were like pretty good team, and then the coach came. He said, "Look, like you're not doing the box to box midfield thing. I need you like running. You can't just be staying up front and that." And I stopped doing all the little things he wanted, and he dropped me down to the B team, and I kind of thought, oh, I don't really want to do that. And I was saying to my mum, I want to go and play rugby, and she's like, no, you'll get your teeth knocked out, which is ironic because I've hadn't done that. I'd have knocked out anyway. But then so I was like, I'm 15, and my mum wouldn't let me go training, so I had to go out on my bike, and I cycled myself to training, and kind of from there I played 3 games, and I got scouted after 3 games. It was a pretty, pretty crazy transition.
Bit of a natural. And from joining the academy, then you were regular in the first team as a teenager. Do you remember how it felt, sort of those early days when you was getting into it and making your debut and whatnot?
Yeah, my academy days were the best days of my life. There was a great group of us, about 9 or 10 of us, and we kind of play for the academy on the weekend. We go and have a few beers together, and really enjoyed it. But we all really worked hard together, and we had a great little crew there. And they're the best years of your life when you're young, you're carefree, you've not got any responsibilities. So I really, really enjoyed my academy days. And then I remember, so I made my debut when I was, I think I was 18 or 19, and that was a real good moment. Like, I think you look back on your career, and I look back on my career personally, and obviously I've got a lot of things that I'm proud of, but I think that first game, nothing beats that feeling of the coach giving you the call and saying, look, you're in this week. And I remember it was a pretty old team back then. Like, we had some like mega players. We had like Benny Westwood, Joel Monaghan, Trent Waterhouse, Simon Grix, like some real leaders. So I kind of done it. So I didn't feel too many nerves at all, because you're playing with you're looking around in the change rooms and you've got people like that with you. And I feel grateful to have been able to come through with players like that who've been able to kind of have a little say on my journey.
So it was quite a gilded path then, wasn't it? Because you were probably the first one out of your group to make your debut, and you were picked up after playing three games. Did that make you sloppy, maybe give you a sloppy mentality?
I wouldn't say it did at the start. I'd say, like you say, obviously I've started playing rugby a few years ago, when I was 15, and then playing Super League. So I played three games that year, and I really, really did work hard. And then when I was 20... I played 19 games that season, and I think that probably started to go to my head then the second year, when I was playing more or less week in, week out. I think I started, and obviously, like I said, it was an older team, so after a game, they've come from the old school mentality. After a game, you have a few beers, and I used to watch them probably have a few beers, and I thought that I could do that, but then what I didn't see was all the work they were probably doing away from training, and so I was having the beers and going out, but I wasn't doing the extra work that that it required for me to kind of take my career up. And I think then the 2016, I had a pretty rude awakening. I was dropped out of the team regularly. I think I played about six games all season. I think I played like two games all season, and I was just, like I say, sloppy habits. I wasn't doing any extra fitness. I wasn't very fit. I was sloppy body fat wise and stuff like that. And I went and had a chat with the coach, Tony Smith, and I said, look, I feel like I need to go out on loan because I feel like I'm going backwards. And he agreed and sent me out on loan to Bradford. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I always say that loan move to Bradford, I've like tell all the young kids here, like when I try and tell them to appreciate what you've got, because when I went out on loan there, and I loved my time there, I loved the lads there, I loved the coach there, but I remember I was on my way home on the second day at Bradford, coming down the M62, anyone who's been on the M62 will know I was stuck in a bit of traffic, and I was just thinking, what are you doing? Like, you've got perfect opportunity in front of you. I believe in myself, I believe in my talent, so I believed that I could do it, but I just needed to make a few sacrifices, a few different life choices, and I like to watch a lot of YouTube. Me and I was watching a YouTuber at the time, Joe Delaney, who was talking about, like, basically he has a sick rig and that. He was a fitness YouTuber, and he's talking about macros and his diet. And on his diet, he ate like bread. He ate loads of carbs. And every time I tried dieting, I think I always got told just go low carb. And I'd eat no carbs for about 3 days, and then I'd like pig out and eat about 20,000 calories a day over the weekend, so it just didn't work for me. And then I saw this guy explain that I can eat carbs and I can eat pasta and blah blah blah, and so that, like, I started dieting, started doing my extra work, and then the back end of the season like went really well, to be honest.
When you got to that moment where it was kind of, you know, what am I doing with my life? Where's my career going? Did it make you sort of think, because you was about to lose it, that you've just got to go all in and totally change everything about your mentality?
I would say it did that. And to be honest, so I had 1 year left on my deal, and I'm so glad that I had 1 year left on my deal, because I was thinking, if I didn't have another year left on my deal, they'd be letting me go. 100% they'd be letting me go. That's how I felt in my head. But then kind of back end of the season, like I said, I came good. And like, I wouldn't say it was all at once, because I still, like, you know, you make little mistakes along the way, and I did make a few little mistakes. Like, you know, sometimes I would go out probably when they told me not to or whatever. Yeah. But at least I was doing the work, like, away from the training ground. I was going to the gym, I was doing all my extra bits. And then I kind of, as you grow, because I feel like you do only learn from your mistakes as well. I feel like you can tell any young kid who's 21, oh, don't do this because I regretted it when I did it, but they're not going to listen to you. Like, 21-year-olds are going to make mistakes, and then they learn from them because they regret doing whatever they did. And like, I feel like that's the best way. So I did, like, it was a mass. It was like a light bulb moment. It was just like, right, you need to. And like, it was just like that.
Yeah, you've got to live it a little bit yourself, haven't you? You know all that anyway from what people are telling you and from your own experience, but you've got to live it a little bit and feel what it's going to be like to before you can do it, don't you?
Yeah, like you don't have good days without having bad days. Like, because, and I had a lot of bad days. Like, I was coming home, I was like, he's not picked me again. And my head would be flying. But because I had them days, now I am so grateful to have my shirt every week. And I won't give my shirt up to anyone. And, you know, I'm competitive as anything because I know what it feels like to not have it. And I don't want that feeling again. So yeah. I'm a competitor and I want to have that shirt every single week because, like I said, I've had them bad times.
Yeah. And you just mentioned perspective there. You've become a dad over the last 18 months. Has that changed your perspective on life and maybe your career a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Being a dad has it's changed my perspective on life and my career. On my career, it's just I'm not just doing this career now, you know, for me to try and get a head start in life. I've got a young lad who I've got to provide for, and I want to give him the best life I possibly can, and teach him a lot of life lessons that I've probably learned through rugby, and it's given me a perspective on life. I mean, it's brought out a whole other side of me that I didn't really know that I had, because like me emotionally as a person, I'm pretty shut off from my emotions. Like I feel like I can deal with my emotions really well, or maybe not so well, because I kind of just keep things inside. I'll show no emotion, and I've got kind of a little bit of a, not, I wouldn't say a coldness, because I'm really like empathetic.
Why do you think that is?
So when I was younger, I've come from a big family. My mum's one of seven and my dad's one of 12. Wow. So no TVs back then, was there? Yeah. So I come from a big family, and with that comes obviously a lot of people. I dealt with a lot of death as a young kid, probably younger than most people. You know, I've been to more funerals than I can remember of people that I loved, uncles, aunties. I've been to, you know, grandparents, all that. I feel like I've dealt with quite a lot of loss at a young age, which I'm really, really grateful for now, because I feel like I've kind of come to terms with mortality, you know, that we are mortal, and you've only got one life, and I feel like you've got to live every day. Tomorrow's not promised.
Everybody knows they're going to die, don't they? But not many people like really know it. You all know it academically, but you don't wake up every day thinking like this is the only life I've got. And I think that's a big problem for some people, because they act like they're immortal even though they know they're not. Yeah. And I think if you've had that sort of experience of death, it does sort of make you appreciate life a little bit more.
Yeah, I once read a quote, and I'm probably going to misquote it now and mess it up, but I once read a quote that, like, you live two lives, like one life, and then when you realise that you're going to die, that's your second life, like, where you kind of get more urgency about you, like, you.
It's interesting that, I don't know if you watch Peaky Blinders, but that's what that's based on. So it's all after the First World War, and they always say in that thing, like, I don't know if people listening at home watch Peaky Blinders, but Tommy says in that everything from now on is extra, because they were lucky to survive the First World War, and that's what drives him on, and that's the whole thing behind him.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
So that whole idea is what Peaky Blinders is based on. That's what drives him to be sort of ambitious when he comes out of the army.
That's wicked. That's wicked. But yeah, I mean, so, like I said, I'm grateful for that happening in my life, because I like the fact that I can control that I'm not going to get upset, and, like, you know, I don't cry and stuff like that. But then at the same time, like, my missus, she can be watching a video. She could be sat on the bed watching a video. I'll turn around, she's crying her eyes out. And I'm just like, but then I think that's actually nice that she's like that in touch with her emotions, that she can do that. But then having Bobby has brought out this unwavering love. I he'll look at me and smile or cuddle me, and my heart'll melt, and he turned me into a little soppy thing. But but I kind of like that, because you know, I don't want to be this you know, this tough man 24/7.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, just touched on mortality there. Something we talked about a little bit in this podcast is that rugby players have a career mortality. You know that in 5-10 years. You're not going to be able to play anymore. Is that something that you think about? Is that, I know you started your business, which we'll get onto in a minute. Is it something that worries you a little bit that you're going to have to do something else in the next sort of 10 years?
I wouldn't say it worries me. I wouldn't say it worries me at all. But I'm hyper aware of it, and I'm aware that I've got a short period here of playing rugby league where, you know, I'll have a decent wage and I can try and like set some things up in place. But then the thought of like a career change every 10 to 15 years for the rest of my life would, like, I reckon that'd really suit me, just like completely just doing something new.
Keep it interesting.
Keep it interesting. But like I said, I'm really, really aware of that, and that's probably why I set up my business. Obviously, lockdown hit, and our lives were put on hold. You didn't realise how long COVID was going to be around for. We were just chucked into the unknown, weren't we? And then, like, you kind of realise, like, I watch a lot of things, like I said, on YouTube, and they're saying, like, you need to have multiple streams of income, because you don't know what's going to happen. What if fans were never allowed back in or whatever? So I set up my business. I've had the idea for ages with my mate Jack Hodgkiss, who I do Grips with. He's got his own construction business, the Jalt Group, and I've kind of had this idea because it started off as Grip Socks, because I've wore, I won't say the name, but like branded Grip Socks that were expensive and just didn't like them. They didn't do what I wanted them to do, and I saw a bit of a gap in the market. So I was thinking for ages, but just, obviously I'm focused on my career and stuff like that, so I didn't have time to set up a business. And then when lockdown hit, it gave me the time to do it. So we kind of got a pair of socks made, weren't happy with them, sent them back six or seven times. We sent them back until we got, like, they got them exactly how we wanted them, and I was really happy with the product. So we went live, and that was 18 months ago we started getting started, and we went live just over a year ago.
Fantastic. Just launched some activewear as well.
Well, launching, yeah, probably be out by the time by the time this is out, but we've just launched our first drop of activewear. I mean, all our customers, obviously it fits the brand, because our customers are all into the sports and very sporty, and they've been asking us for ages when are we going to drop some gym wear for them to wear. They want to rep the brand, not just on the feet, but on the clothes. And so we've had some active wear made, and like we said, it grips your body in the perfect way. So people should get on it.
Fantastic. And what have you learned doing this? I can imagine that there's a steep learning curve setting up something that's completely different from playing rugby.
Yeah, that's the best thing. This literally the best thing about it is, like, I've acquired so many new skills in the last 12 months and lessons of what to do, what not to do. I'm an email marketing pro at the minute. Like, if anyone's signed up to our mailing list, I'm the one who's sending them emails every morning, going in Starbucks and sending them. And just so many business lessons. And I feel like setting up this business now, say I have a great business idea in 10 years time, and I think, like, sit there, like, this is the business idea where I'm going to become a millionaire. I'd set up that business where I think I'm going to become a millionaire and make all the mistakes that you make the first time you make a business, because I've made so many mistakes, and, you know, running out of stock, not ordering enough stock, spending too much on marketing, whatever it is, every mistake you could make, we've made in the first year. But that's brilliant, because you learn from your mistakes. And so I feel like, say the $1 million idea comes to me in 10 years' time, I'm going to have years of experience of all the mistakes I've made, learn from them, and then I can capitalise on it. So that's
you'll already be an email marketing pro, and you know how to set up a website, so you'll be able to execute on it like that, won't you?
I might even set up an email marketing agency, who knows? But
Warrington Wolves fans, because you're getting emails written by Joe Philbin. And is education something that's important to you? You've mentioned YouTube, watching things on YouTube, reading books, not perhaps a sort of formal classroom type of education, but is that commitment to improving yourself all the time very important to you?
Massively. And it's funny, because a rugby league changing room is the most ruthless place ever, and I have been ripped so much for how I am, like, because I am a massively love reading books on self-improvement, how I can make myself a little bit better. I'll go and do yoga, Pilates, all. And I don't know why it's funny, to be honest, when people are taking the mick out of me, but like, it's just, you know, they'll jump on anything. But it's a massive part of me. And like I said, most of it's just on YouTube. Like, yeah. I my screen time would be disgusting on YouTube. Like, it'd probably knock me sick. But I don't know. Like, I'd be sat there at home, maybe put Netflix on, and then I'll think, like, why are you watching Netflix? You should be learning something, which I don't think it's a good thing, always thinking you need to be like grinding away.
You need to be able to relax.
You need to find that happy medium. But it's a massive part of my life, that.
Yeah. Has setting up the business been a little bit of a sort of distraction for you? I know some players take up golf, some players take up, I don't know, playing darts or whatever. Is that something that's like a bit of an escape for you as well?
Yeah, who plays darts? No,
well, that's it. Talking about darts this morning, so that's top of mind at the minute.
What was it again? Does it distract me? I'd say it's a very welcome distraction, because I'm very, like, if I have a bad game, or even if I had a good game, I focus on that one error that I made, like, I did a rubbish tackle there, and it'll play on my mind until the cows come home, and I'm still the same. However, having something else to focus on, so I'm not fully like rugby league where I'm so focused, so zoned in, has been a good thing, because overthinking is never good for anything. So like, me thinking about that tackle that I missed, or you know, me dropping that ball, like, you need to dwell on it, 100%, because you want to learn from your mistakes. However, over dwelling on things and overthinking, you just shell up.
You just need to learn your lessons and move on, don't you?
100%, and I feel like just having something else to focus on has been really, really good for me.
Do you think that rugby players sometimes don't realise what they have? That, you know, you're in an environment where you're developing leadership skills in a high-performing team. If you add marketable skills into that, like, for instance, your business stuff, or medical, or fitness, do you think that rugby players can supercharge what they're doing because of that?
I think we have so many transferable skills, it's ridiculous, and like high-level transferable skills, like the detail that we go to in wanting to break defences down, and we all have to be so focused, and we have to know each other's role, our role. I'd say they'd be very employable. Obviously, you'd have to add on to that, like you say, a few actual skills that would work in a workplace as well. But like you say, the leadership... difficult awkward conversations, you've got it all, and I do feel like that, and I do feel like that's why rugby league players, a lot of them should be doing stuff like getting themselves sorted for afterwards, so you can just slot into a role, and a rugby league player would be an asset to any environment, not just like I might give him a job, like they'd be like, he's got experience of playing on the biggest stage, keeping his cool,
dealing with pressure.
Pressure, yeah. Like, I feel like, what more would you want in an employee?
Holding people to higher standards and things like that. You seem like you've got, you know, quite a big work ethic. Is your upbringing down to that?
Yeah, I'd say so. My dad's a farmer. I was brought up on a farm. And hardest working man I've ever seen in my life. He's no days off. Christmas Day, Christmas morning, he's... wake up, make us all bacon butties, and then take all of us lads to the farm, and brothers. We'd have to feed the cows, because cows will die if they don't get fed, so we'd feed and bed the cows, and that was our Christmas Day every year. Absolute grafter. And it's funny, because when rugby started going well for me, and I'd say probably the academy years, and I'd be like, I'd have played a game, and then the next day I'd just want to have a lie in or whatever. He's like, right, you're coming to the farm. I'm like, Dad, they've told, like, I need you to know recovery. Like, recovery is a massive part of sport. You need to recover. And he's like, oh, you're soft and all this. And like, I think I was trying to get John Bastian, the old head of youth, to say, come on, have a word with me, Dad, and tell him stop trying to get me to the farm. But I do reckon that's where I got the work ethic from, because my dad will get home from the farm and he'll be doing stuff in the gutter. Like, he just can't keep still. And I feel like, if I was to ever not have a work ethic on the rugby field, like, he never would say it, but, like, I feel like my dad would be a bit disappointed in me.
He's kind of set the standard that you've got to follow.
Yeah, yeah, and, like, all my brothers are the same. They're all pretty high achievers in all the different areas that they're in. They've all got real good jobs, and and I reckon that comes from that work ethic that my dad's passed on to us.
Yeah. You've got a really, really close family.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, when you said, like, how do I switch off from rugby and stuff like that, that's the best thing. Like, if you go to my mum and dad's house on a Sunday, big farmhouse, and, you know, they've got a few fields and that, and we go, take Bobby, my brother Daniel, go take his two lads, Freddie and Frankie. Our Pete sometimes comes, he obviously lives down in Norwich now, but he comes and he's got his two girls, Addie and Evie, and, like, just get all the nephews, nieces together and all my brothers, and it's brilliant. And, like, that's kind of like, they're like the best days for me, just going there, letting the kids play out in the garden, and we're just all catching up with each other. I'm very grateful, I feel like, for being brought up the way I've been brought up in a good family, and having all my brothers so close together as well. Four brothers, so there's five lads that born in between 7 years of each of us, we're all similar ages.
A few fights as well.
Oh, mate, the scraps were. I remember one when we were at a caravan park somewhere, and my mum and dad had gone out, and me and our aunt, who's like, aunt's the middle child, I'm the second youngest, and we had a full on, like, all round us clapping us and, like, on top of each other, ground and pound, and, like, proper filling each other in. But there were so many fights, but nowadays.
A lot of love there as well.
Oh, nowadays it's all love. It's all love.
So, just going to finish off with a few more generic questions that I'm always interested to ask these questions. I think it reveals a lot about a person. So, if you can meet anyone dead or alive, who would it be and what would you ask them?
Wow. I never had a granddad, so I'd probably meet both my granddads, and just what I could have done, really. See the man who made my dad and the man who made my mum, yeah.
So that's an interesting one, actually, because you talk about how your parents made you.
Well, I hear my dad's dad. I hear my dad's dad was harder than my dad, like, tougher on them than my dad. So I'd love to meet him.
Fantastic. And who's inspired you most in your life?
Parents. The more I look at it now, I say I had five brothers. Like, there's five of us overall, and I was off. I was playing cricket on a Wednesday in Wigan. I was playing rugby on a Tuesday, football on a Monday. Like, and my mum's taking me to all these different places, and all of us were doing that. So, like, I don't know how they had no time to themselves. It was literally take us here, there, and everywhere, and, like, we were their life. And, like, it's only now when I'm this age and I look and I think, geez, I enjoy my own space and my own time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they had none of that. They really put us first. But I mean, it's paid off. We've all done well for ourselves, but. That's an inspiration.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Start now, get perfect later.
It's a good one, that, actually, when you only play three games and getting picked up by
Warrington. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Start now, get perfect later.
And what's the best thing about being a Warrington Wolves player?
Just them big games, man. Them big games. Obviously, grateful for every single game that I get to play, and I'm not. But, like, them big games when... Friday night, Aliwell Jones Stadium, Friday night lights, and the South Stand's just rocking, brilliant. Like, just makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up now, think about it, and just an electric atmosphere, and also big away days as well, when you've got a full stand just going absolutely barmy. It's brilliant. That's my favourite part.
There you go, a fascinating insight into the mind of Joe Philbin. He's motivated, articulate and incredibly mature, and we're very proud to have him here at the Warrington Wolves. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.